This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Would like to welcome all our home listeners. Just a reminder, if you have a cell phone, please turn it off, because otherwise you will be assessed a fee, and that will go to the chairman's not-for-profit choice. So I appreciate that. And I see we don't have any pages this morning. She went to run an errand. So when she comes back, we'll do that. So, Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Bartling? Here. Hunstead?
Here.
Allers?
Here.
Nordstrom?
Here.
Brown?
Here.
Haverly?
Here.
Hunhoff?
Here. We have a quorum present. Thank you. Well, we're going to start this morning with House Bill 1040, which revises certain license, registration, and inspection fees related to service establishments, lodging establishments, and campgrounds. So I would invite the proponents. And just a reminder that if you're going to speak, you need to sign in, and the sign-in is right outside the door. So good morning, Secretary.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Donnie Hollingsworth, and I'm the Secretary of the Department of Health. Madam Chair, with your permission, could Mr. Martinez join me at the table? Thank you. House Bill 1040 is an act to raise certain license, registration, and inspection fees related to food service, lodging, and campgrounds. An important part of the Department of Health's role in protecting the public health is the regulation of food service, lodging, and campgrounds. When the public eats at a licensed restaurant, they expect it to be clean and that the food has been handled and prepared in a safe manner. When the public spends the night in a licensed motel, they expect the room and the pool to be clean, and if they are awakened in the middle of the night by a fire alarm, that they are able to exit unfamiliar surroundings quickly and safely. When the public sets up camp in a campground, they expect a safe drinking water supply and a safe sewer system. The Department of Health regulates this industry through a licensing and inspection process. The Department of Public Safety assists us with routine inspections using their inspection pool. The licensing fees collected from these facilities currently cover about half the cost of this program. The fees collected from these facilities are deposited to the general fund. General funds are then appropriated to the department to pay for this program. The general fund is subsidizing the cost of regulating this industry. Most of these fees have not been increased for at least 12 years. The Health Department has worked with this industry, especially with relevant associations, since before the governor's first budget speech in early December, to make them aware of these fee increases. A friendly amendment was added to the bill in the House to address the only real concern addressed by these groups. Madam Chair, my overview was an overview of why we are proposing these fee increases, and Mr. Martinez will tell you what we're proposing to do.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, Tom Martinez, Division Director with the Department of Health. As Secretary Hollingsworth stated, House Bill 1040 would raise an additional $445,860 in additional revenue. We're proposing to do this through four different ways. And following along on the bill brief there on the first page, first we're looking to do a 50% increase in the annual license fee. Most of the annual fees haven't been raised since 1997, and some longer than that. The estimated additional revenue that this will generate is approximately $191,695. And currently, the annual fees, most of the fees are in rule. What House Bill 1040 would do is it would put them all into statute. We're also going to implement a new routine inspection fee. And by law, routine inspections are required each year. Lodging facilities, two routine inspections are required. Food service facilities, there's two routine inspections are required. And for lodging, hotels, motels, and campgrounds, it's one routine inspection per year. Currently, there are no fees charged for these routine inspections. What we're proposing to do is charge a $25 fee for each of these routine inspections. And we estimate that that will raise an additional $194,325 in revenue. We're also looking to implement a new establishment fee. This is another new fee. And what we would do is we would charge a $100 fee for a brand new establishment seeking licensure. The purpose of this fee is to cover the cost of plan review and technical assistance provided. And depending on the operator and the size and complexity of the facility, the plan review does take quite some time. And with some new operators new to the industry, there is a lot of technical assistance provided to those folks. We estimate that this new establishment fee will raise an additional $30,900 each year. And then lastly, House Bill 1040 implements another new fee, a water recreation facility fee. And by water recreation facility, we're talking about a swimming pool, a spa, a hot tub, anything like that that's primarily used for recreational purposes. Again, the idea behind this is to cover the cost associated with the inspection costs associated with these water recreation facilities. When a hotel or a motel or a campground has a swimming pool or a hot tub, it takes the inspector additional time. It lengthens the duration of the inspection because they have to look through the records of those water rec facilities. They have to make sure that all the applicable regulations are being met there. Currently, there is no additional fee charged to establishments with water recreation facilities. We estimate that this fee will raise an additional $28,940 in revenue. And then just to bring to your attention the chart on page 3 of the bill brief, the four columns of that chart are specific to South Dakota and what we're doing. It shows the date that the fees, the fee categories, the date they were last changed, the current fee charge, and then what the proposed fee would be. And then the last four columns are information that we've gathered regarding some surrounding states, what they charge, just so you can kind of compare. And I think it's a fair statement to say that we're kind of in the fee range, we're kind of in the middle of things compared to these surrounding states. With that, Madam Chair, we'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Questions for the proponents? Senator Novstra.
Thank you, Chairman. If I owned a hotel that had 100 units in it, you would inspect it once a year at $2.25 a room, so my cost would be $225 for the inspection, correct?
Madam Chair, no. Actually, that's not correct. The annual fee for that facility would be $2.25 per unit. The inspection, the one inspection you get, that would be, there'd be a $25 charge for that.
Go ahead.
Numerous follow-ups, please.
Go ahead.
So the cost, if I owned a 100-room hotel, would be $250 per year under this plan. It'd be $225 plus
$25. Madam Chair, yeah. If that math is right, yes, that's what it'd be.
It's $25 for the inspection.
Yes.
And $225 per room times 100 rooms would be $250 total.
Correct. Yep.
How many of those can an inspector do in a day?
Madam Chair, I'm Senator Nordstrup. That's a difficult question to answer. And the reason being is, I guess if you had a number of facilities all in the same community, they could probably do a fair amount. We estimate that the average inspection, and this is grouping food service, lodging, and campground all together, takes about an hour and 15 minutes. to do an adequate inspection, the inspector, the average inspector would need to spend at least an hour and 15 minutes on-site doing that inspection. Now, again, that's, I'm talking a generalization here. With a fairly large hotel like you're talking, I guess I can't tell you if that would be a little bit more or a little bit less. But it's the best I can answer that question.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions. With your new license fees, what prompted you to go that arena? Your introductory comments were public safety. And so now we've got this water recreational facility fee. Did those people that had a pool, they had to be sending in samples, water samples all along this time? I mean, that's been part of the process. So what, in addition, are you identifying that needs to be addressed or reviewed?
In general, Madam Chair, the first thing we looked at was the target amount. What will it take for us to cover the cost of regulating this industry? And that's where we came up with the total is $445,000 in addition to what we're raising now in general funds. And so then we thought, what is the most fair way to assess those fees? And we tried to spread it similar to what we did really with the healthcare facilities, a bill that was in your committee a week or so ago. We tried to spread it across to the facilities based on the time that we spend there and where there's greater risk. And facilities that have swimming pools and hot tubs, there is a public health issue. There can be public health issues there. The inspector has to spend a little more time at those facilities, and so we're adding an additional fee because of that.
Okay.
And the same with the new fees, Madam Chair, because as Tom said, we spend more time with a new facility as they're starting up in business.
Okay. Then one other question. And I'll use check days. We run a food stand, and the food inspector shows up, and whoever gets that first shift in the morning gets the luck of the draw, and they get to deal with the inspector. Does that mean now that we'll be assessed, those not-for-profits where they show up will be assessed a fee of 25, or how does that work?
Well, there won't be any change to some group that isn't charged now won't be charged because of this bill. Is that correct, Tom?
Correct. Yeah.
But temporary food service establishments are charged now in law, and their rate is going up according to this chart in the back. But if it's a facility that's already exempted, they are not going to be charged under this bill. There's no new categories added.
Okay. All right, Senator Allers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what Senator Hunhoff is getting at is the inspection fee part, the $25 fee.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And would they be charged that fee?
Oh, Madam Chair, again, if it's a nonprofit organization that's currently exempt, they would still be exempt from any fees.
All right.
But excuse me, I think the inspection fee on a temporary food service, it only lasts for a short number of days. Is it up to 14 days? And so they just get charged once. They don't get charged the temporary food service license, but they don't get charged the inspection fee also.
Yeah, that's correct.
Does that make sense?
I don't want to open up a can of worms here. I don't ever recall. I mean, you've got in all these communities, you've got churches that have a bazaar, you've got something. I mean, that's where I'm coming from because I'm part of that process. I never saw that we had to pay a fee. So that was my question, if that would change anything for those people that are having. And you're shaking your head, but you need to respond.
No, Madam Chair. Again, they're currently exempt from regulation, and they would continue to be.
Great. Thank you. Senator Haverly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I sort of talked to my counterpart over here to make sure this wasn't asked, and I think he started to go down this path, this question. My big concern, as it is with any agency that comes before this committee, so you understand where the question's coming from, is that we raise fees when we don't have to, or that we raise fees, and I'm not against that as long as there's justified cause. Does this fee increase bring more money than necessary to cover the cost of the program, or is it meeting the needs of the program?
Madam Chair, it is meeting the needs. Our FY10 budget request, general fund appropriation for our inspectional program, is $820,656. This represents a $132,835 increase over FY09. With the increase in fees that we're asking for, the fees would totally cover that $820,000 and really no more.
Go ahead.
I bent my travel drive in the excitement to get to the microphone. with that in mind, then, what happens to the general fee request that you had in your originally proposed budget? You said it cost, this is going to, if this were to pass, that would take the heat off of the general fund expenditure of $800,820, whatever you just mentioned. Again, trying to write. Could you tell me what happens to that money?
Well, the budget was built based on assuming this fee, these fees would be increased, Senator Haverly. So it's the fees that are generated from this program go to the general fund, and then the general funds are appropriated to our department. And the amount that we're raising in these fees is almost exactly what's recommended for the FY10 budget. It's very close.
Well, Madam Chair,
and we can get you exactly what those numbers
are. What are you recommending in the FY10 budget for a general fund?
$820,656.
So walk me through this as I talk to you. This would go into the general fund, this fee increase,
yes,
which would then in turn cover it. So this has nothing. FY09, which we're currently in, is money gone. I just happen to notice there's no emergency clause on this, so obviously
no.
You're not trying to get this quickly.
Certainly not.
Okay. I thank you very much. Sometimes I get lost.
Senator Brown.
I've got a couple of related questions, if I can have the latitude. Secretary, I was wondering if perhaps you can enlighten me. I take a look at perhaps Senator Northrup's example where he started to go down that road, and let's just take that one hotel that we were talking about, and let's say it's a fairly robust hotel. We've got 100 rooms. We've got a swimming pool and a hot tub. They obviously have an eating establishment there. So I start adding this up, and we're looking at probably close to $500 or more in fees. You know, if I've got a food service there, you know, if they had 100-plus seating, it could be $225 for that. We've got the hotel rooms, which we figured at $225 plus a $25 fee. We're looking at water recreational facility fees of $65. So obviously, I would presume we're going to say that this takes this inspector. Is this all going to be accomplished on the same day by the same inspector?
Madam,
we have a hotel that we're looking at, is when we go through and we take a look at these things, are you going to send out multiple inspectors on different days?
No. Generally, to preface this, we do utilize the Department of Public Safety's inspector pool. And they do inspections on behalf of, I think, 7 different agencies. They do lottery inspections and food service. It's my understanding that if they would go into a facility like that, they would do all the required inspections right there. So it'd be the lodging inspection, the food service inspection. If they get a bar and video lottery machines, they would do that too while they were there.
Okay, so then to follow up, you know, assuming that this is going to take a couple of hours to do this for this inspector, I guess I'm wondering what else goes into this inspection process kind of behind the scenes, because presumably these people aren't making $200 or $300 an hour, which would be required for their costs. So could you tell me a little bit about what's required after they get done at that facility that obviously helps to raise the price of and the need for these high inspection fees? Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Madam Chair, I think I do, Senator Brown, and I guess if I could, are you coming from a perspective that...
Well, let's break it down like this. I guess in terms of the inspection program, what is your biggest cost? Is it the labor that's involved for the inspector? Is it the travel to and from these facilities? Is there something else behind the scenes?
Madam Chair, I would say, it's the labor for the inspections and the travel. Those are our biggest costs. Just a couple of the things to recognize here, too, is there is more to the inspectional program than just the routine inspections. We also do complaint inspections, which aren't reflected in these numbers. I mean, we do them. We get calls all the time, ate at so-and-so restaurant and I got sick, or saw something there that shouldn't be happening. We do follow up on those. If there is a violation, sometimes if we do find violations, sometimes we can charge them for follow-up inspections. But again, those costs currently aren't assessed to anyone, I guess. It's part of the inspection program costs.
Did you have any more?
Just real quickly.
Okay.
I guess the reason I ask that is certainly with a lot of my constituents, who have worked in either food service areas or different places, one of their biggest complaints to me is that it seems like in their one particular establishment, they may have inspectors that come out on numerous occasions, and it would seem like it would be cost-wise maybe to try to take care of that in one setting. And that's why, I guess that's part of the reason I asked that question, how closely we look at that.
Did you have a response?
Well, I could just add... In 1995, I was in the department when the former Governor Janko consolidated the inspection process, because there used to be health department inspectors, video lottery inspectors, revenue inspectors. I mean, and that was a complaint that a lot of facilities had. And so by consolidating the inspection process and by having a more multi-purpose inspector, the intent was to try to cut down on those multiple visits. If that's not happening, I know that Secretary Dravland would like to hear about that and some suggestions for improving that, because that was the intent of that, certainly.
Senator Northrup.
I'm a little frustrated because I'm trying to put the right concept together, but what I'm trying to get to is that this is a business, and there is a cost per hour that you've got to do an inspection. What is that cost per hour?
We get charged a rate.
Yeah, Madam Chair, for the DPS inspections, we get charged a rate. And I think currently that's around $49 an hour right now.
Follow up. Who's charging the rate?
Madam Chair, the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you.
Again, it is the inspectional pool within the Department of Public Safety, Department of Public Safety employees that are doing these routine inspections on behalf of the Health Department.
Go ahead.
Help me with the math. Am I missing something? You can do an inspection on a 100-unit hotel in an hour and 15 minutes. Let's round that up to 2 hours. Give you some. It costs you $49 an hour, which we'll round that up to $50. So the cost of doing that inspection is $100, because we round it up to 2 hours times 50 is $100. Mm-hmm. So the cost of inspecting a 100-unit hotel is $100. The fee is $250 per year.
Yes.
Am I missing something?
Well, The other cost of the program, that's the rate that we pay the inspectors, that we're charged by Commerce to cover that inspection pool. But the other part of the program is the part in the department that Tom talked about, just the overall, we do the licensing, we do the complaints, we do the legal part. So what it costs to do the entire program is what... Is what the total cost is. It's the cost in our, it's all in our budget in general funds, but then we pay part of it on an hourly rate to the Department of Public Safety. That 49 isn't the total cost, it's just the cost of the inspection that's charged to us.
Senator Ahlers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think you guys accurately said this at the beginning, and you guys know that I own a food establishment. I've worked in and out of the food industry for quite a while. And you said it earlier, it's consumer protection. The businesses already pay half that cost. I think the key word is here, who benefits from these inspections? And I believe that would be the consumer. So tell me why the business should bear the full cost of these inspections.
Well, that's a good question, Senator Ahlers. As we were working on the budget this year, the premise is that, well, really, these fees haven't been increased in most instances for 12 years. That's not a good way to do business. We should be covering the costs. Some industries that the state regulates, the cost is covered. And so the budget office asked us to look, as a government, where are places that we're not fully covering the cost of regulating a business. And in some instances, maybe it's not appropriate. Maybe it is appropriate that the general fund should subsidize that. In this one, it was not determined that should be the case. And in most states, that's exactly what happens. The regulation cost covers, the cost charged to the businesses covers the regulation. That's very typical in most states.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that may be true. I'm looking at these costs here, and if we go with your new proposed fees, that actually puts us out of higher than Wyoming, Montana, and North Dakota. The only ones that will be less than is Minnesota. And then if you look at the routine inspection fees, we'll be the ones that are the only ones that are charging that inspection fee, which brings me back to the original question, who benefits from that inspection? I know personally, as anecdotally, I don't benefit from that inspection. It's in my best interest to run a clean business, but who benefits from the inspection? That's the customer, the consumer.
Madam Chair, if I can attempt to respond to that, I guess I would submit that the business does benefit from routine inspections, and I can't speak specifically on your behalf, but I know that in routine inspections we find serious, significant health violations occurring that the facility owner is maybe aware of, maybe they aren't. So certainly there's a liability issue there that they benefit from when it's brought to their attention. And also I think just, you know, the regulation itself creates a level playing field. You know, as an operator, that the business down that the restaurant down the street has to meet all the regulations that you do too. So again, I see some benefit there too, and you know that our inspector is going to be going into that facility as well.
So. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a two-part question, if I may. Thank you for the latitude. Okay. Is it true that in Sioux Falls you contract with the Sioux Falls Health Department to do your inspections?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you for that. And I know some people that work down in with the city, and tell me if this is a fair analysis of it. Sioux Falls bills you for the service they provide, and they were looking at raising their fees for these inspections, but when they heard the state was going to raise the fees, they backed off on that fee proposal. That was my impression I got from the city.
The city does not bill us. for this, the inspection services that they provide. The city of Sioux Falls is the only municipality, the only other local government in the state that provides these services on our behalf. We have a memorandum of agreement with them. But what we do is the fees that we receive from Sioux Falls facilities, restaurants, and lodging, and campgrounds, if there are any in the city of Sioux Falls, those fees go back to the city of Sioux Falls. Those don't go to the general fund. But they don't bill us for their services.
But essentially, we're paying them for that service. They're keeping the dollars that we would normally get.
Yes, because they are performing that service, yes.
City Secretary, I was looking through here, and it was 12 years since we had last increased the food service fees, correct? If we were to go with these proposed increases that we have right now, when would you anticipate that we're going to need to raise those fees again?
That's a very good question, Senator, and I believe it wouldn't be 12 years. It shouldn't be 12 years. But certainly we don't have plans to do this again next year. What these fee increases do is takes us to the recommended FY10 budget for the program. So at some point in the future, in the near future, the fees won't be covering the costs. And so probably some future governor and some future Secretary of Health will be talking to the committee about that.
Yes, Senator Nostrup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you were to stick with the current fees and put it out to bid as a private venture, would you have any bidders?
I don't have any idea, Senator.
Thank you.
I need to comment here, and I have a question, because I think, Senator Nostrup, you run a business as well does Senator Ahlers. When you're trying to figure your cost of doing business, they contract for someone to do that, all right? I also am licensed and have to deal with the Department of Health. There are numerous memos that come out or changes in the laws for the standards that the department alerts me, so they're constantly, so that's a sidebar or that's a work that they have to do that. Secondly, when she says dealing with complaints, that's another area that is figured in there for the cost of doing business. Plus, let's say we're not always happy with the surveyors that come out or the inspectors, and so then we have to go back and we request reconsideration of you found, and I would think maybe in the restaurant business it's more than it is, so that's another cost that you have to deal with that, and sometimes it's a matter of updating your inspectors and if you're doing that. So when you're trying to put a cost, I certainly appreciate what you're saying because I certainly look at that, but you've got those other costs that you have to figure in to do the business. It's not just to pay the person to do the inspection. Now, am I on
absolutely, Madam Chair, thank you for that. And another one that just came to mind is training. You know, we have to help, we do help to train the inspectors on updated food codes, lodging issues. It's an ongoing process, and it costs money.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Are there any other proponents? Any proponents? Are there opponents? Good morning. Please identify yourself so the home audience knows who's speaking, and welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Brish, and I'm the director of the South Dakota Innkeepers Association and also a lobbyist for that group. And we were approached by the Department of Health back in, I think it was early December, and had ample opportunity to look at the fees, and we really appreciate that consideration that they gave industry. And we do recognize that lodging establishments as well as their guests are beneficiaries of the inspection program because it does validate the cleanliness and safety of their facilities. We had one small portion of that bill that we had an issue with, and the Department of Health worked with us, and that was putting the cap on the fees for the water recreational facilities. We do support the notion that the fees collected should cover the cost of the inspection program, as we do view that we are beneficiaries, and we think that the fees proposed in this bill are reasonable. Thank you.
Okay, I just have to clarify. Are you a proponent? Are you
proponent?
Okay, all right. Well, okay.
I'm a little late getting out of
that,
the chair.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Now,
that was kind of a long way around the block to oppose
well,
it.
Right. Just wanted to make sure that we have you on record that the innkeepers are a proponent. All right.
Thank you.
Now, are you a proponent or an opponent?
Absolutely.
This is going to be opponent testimony.
I was waiting, Madam Chair. My name is Lauren Pankratz. I'm the registered lobbyist for the Visitor Industry Alliance, a statewide tourism group. And I too was a little slow in getting out of the chair while we were waiting for proponent testimony.
So you're a proponent?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, we'll keep it open as a proponent then. I'm sorry. You have to realize, you know, I'm one of these people that are speedy, and so you got to come right up when we're moving here. I try to keep a quick-moving committee.
That's why I have my chair turned, ready to vacate. and I would echo the comments from Michelle and the South Dakota Innkeepers. We too had the opportunity to sit down and meet with the department, and our biggest concern had to do with that new category of the water recreational facility, and we were, and not unlike some of the questions that have been asked here, that if you had a swimming pool, two hot tubs, then that fee would be charged for each one of those water recreational facilities while the person is standing under one roof looking at all three of them. And so we were able to work with the department, and we appreciate that. I would also add that we have our board has members from throughout the state, and any number of them have businesses in other states, be it restaurants, campgrounds, hotel, motel facilities. And they tell me that the fees that we see here in South Dakota, even with the increases, and nobody likes to see increases, but I think other testimony has indicated that there are times when that's appropriate, that our fees here in South Dakota with respect to this inspection program pale in comparison to even some of our surrounding states. And so while we're not euphoric about the fact that we see some increase, we can be supportive of it, and we appreciated the opportunity to meet with the department and work out one piece of that pie.
Senator Nostrup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Pankratz, how many members do you have?
Oh, our board is probably about 25 to 30 members spread throughout the state. We probably have 200 or 300 maybe dues-paying members, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Follow-up, thank you. Of those 200 or 300, how many of them are in favor of the fee increase?
Madam Chair, I don't know individually.
Thank you.
Senator Hunstad?
My question would, you know, goes back to discussion we had earlier about, you know, who benefits the business or the customer. Would you think that those businesses that you represent will try to figure out a way to charge this to their customers in some way? In other words, I believe that the customers do benefit, but will the businesses be able to pass this on through... I think you understand what I'm asking. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you know, many things, you know, when you get an increased cost for some reason, there are times when it's appropriate maybe to pass that on. I would guess that each business owner is going to have to make that decision individually as to whether or not that's a cost that they can or want to pass on, Senator.
Thank you. Senator Nostrup.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will try to cut down on my questions. I understand. Question for Ms. Bursch, please. Two-part question. first question is, how many members do you have, and how many are on record in favor of this fee increase?
Michelle Brish, I'm with the South Dakota Innkeepers Association. I believe we've got about 185 lodging establishments that are members. We have a 15-member board of directors, and the 15-member board of directors were in favor of this. That's who makes the decision.
Senator Allers.
Just a quick question for you.
Yes.
How many lodging establishments are there in the state of South Dakota?
I believe there's about, they could probably answer more, but I think there's around between 500 and 600.
All right, one last question. We need to move on. Senator Nostrand.
Of the 15 board of members, four board of directors, how many voted to have their fees increased?
I believe it was 15.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other proponents? Last time. This means you're for the bill. All right. Are there any people that are against the bill that would like to speak? Opponents. All right. Opponents. All right. Seeing none, I will close this hearing to public testimony and open it for discussion and or action. Senator Haverly.
Move do pass House Bill 1040.
Second.
It's been moved by Senator Haverly. Do pass on 1040 and seconded by Senator Hunstead. Any comments to the motion?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Haverly.
I got a question for Senator Nordstrom, but I don't want to put him on the spot. But how many constituents do you have in your district? I'm being facetious. And how many of them support this bill? Just being facetious.
Madam Chairman, I've got 22,000 out here, and I am here representing 22,000.
Right,
there
now,
you go. My point
on.
Exactly.
Let's
anyway, Madam Chair, it's very evident that the department has moved forward not only to cover their costs, but very cautiously with the industries that they not so much represent, but in order to meet the needs of the costs involved in the inspection. So with that, I would ask that we wholeheartedly support this and send this to the Senate floor.
All right. All right. We have the motion before us. Do pass on House Bill 1040. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling?
Aye.
Hunstead?
Aye.
Allers?
No.
Nordstrom?
No.
Brown?
Aye.
Haverly?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye. 5-2, motion carries. Thank you. And I will carry that one on the floor. Okay, now we're going to move to House Bill 1043. Thank you for coming and for sharing your testimony, and thank you for the spirited discussion. All right, we'll move on. House Bill 1043. Before we do that, our page is back. I'd like you to come up, introduce yourself, say who you are, where you're from, and what your plans are for after high school.
My name is Shawnee Price. I'm from Faith High School, and I plan on going to Black Hills State University and double majoring in chemistry and biology and double minoring in history and political science, and then going on to chiropractor school after grad.
Very good. I was going to ask about if you're going on to some type of medical.
Yeah. Yep.
Great.
And I hope to have my massage therapy degree within my first year.
Wow. Let me advocate for massage therapists. Great.
Madam Chairman, right now, before we start in this next one, I'd like to move the minutes of February 5th.
Wow. Thank you, Senator Hunstead. Is there a second? All right. All those in favor, we can do this on just voice. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Senator Nostrup, this is not a question, I hope.
No,
all right.
No, I, too, would like to move the minutes of February 30th.
It's been moved for minutes of February 30th.
It would be January 30th.
January 30th, right. There's no February 30th. That's a trick question. All right. Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Any other minutes? All right, we'll move on. House Bill 1043, which makes an appropriation to reimburse certain family physicians and dentists who have completed with the requirements of the Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program or the Dental Tuition Reimbursement Program. Good morning, Ms. Gill. Please identify yourself for the home audience.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lori Gill, and I'm the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Health. I'm here today to present House Bill 1043, which is a special appropriation for tuition reimbursement. One of the issues facing health care in South Dakota is that of a health care workforce shortage. The Department of Health takes that issue seriously, and we work to address that issue as part of our 2010 initiative, which is to sustain a competent workforce. That's one of our goals. One tool available to assist the state are the health professional incentive programs, which improve access to quality health care in South Dakota. This tool is not only for the state, but also for small communities in our state. And the two programs that I'm talking about today particularly serve communities that have less than 10,000 in population. With your permission, I'd like to hand out a document to the committee. House Bill 1043 is an act to make an appropriation to reimburse certain family physicians and dentists who have complied with the requirements of the Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program or the Dental Tuition Reimbursement Program. These two programs were established to help eligible communities recruit physicians and dentists to practice in their communities. And once again, these particularly target smaller communities, those with less than 10,000. Participants in the program agree to practice in the community for 3 years, at the end of which they will receive their reimbursement. The payment is split between the sponsoring community and the state. So that is a partnership, a true partnership between the state and the communities that are participating in this program. For both the Physician Tuition Reimbursement Program and the Dental Tuition Reimbursement Program, the amount of the payment is based on a methodology that is outlined in statute, which is equal to twice the resident tuition at the USD School of Medicine for the four most recent academic years at the signing of the agreement. The percent of the tuition reimbursement the state must pay is based on the community size. For communities that have a population of 2,500 or less, the state's portion is 75% of the total amount. For communities of more than 2,500 but less than 5,000, the state's share is 50%. And for communities between 5,000 and 10,000, the state's share is 25%. And just to break down the sections in the bill, Section 1 appropriates $145,938 to the Department of Health to reimburse one family physician and one dentist who will be fulfilling the requirements of their agreement during fiscal year 2010. And we outlined where those two are practicing. First of all, we have Dr. Melissa Bartling, who has been practicing in Scotland, and she will be fulfilling her obligation, and the payment, the state's portion of the payment, will be due in September 2009. And the state's portion of the payment is $71,163. The dentist is Christopher Rainier, who has been practicing in Martin. And he will be fulfilling his obligation in March of 2010, and the state's portion is $74,775. Section 2 of the bill just authorizes the payment, and once again, the payment that the state makes is made after the community has paid their portion. So that's one thing that we double check. And then also, we don't make any payment, obviously, until the professional has fulfilled their 3-year agreement in that community. And Section 3 of the bill specifies that any money that has not been expended will revert to the state general fund. And occasionally, there is a healthcare professional that has entered into this agreement and for one reason or another does not fulfill their obligation. And then at that point, the agreement is in default and any dollars that would be remaining would revert to the general fund.
Great. Thank you. Any questions?
Oh, I just was going to say that concludes my comments, and I'll stand by for questions.
Senator Brown, then Senator Hunstad.
Well, first of all, I want to commend the department. I think this program is a tremendous program, and I just have a quick technical question. What is the population of Scotland and Martin? Are they both below 2,500?
Do we know what the proportion was for those? At this point, I could, if I could, please bring up Sandy Dirk from the Department of Health, who has more detail about these particular agreements.
Yes, those communities would be 25% small communities. Yes. Sandra Dirk.
I'll just interface. Scotland, not my district, but I'm very familiar with that community, and they have less than 2,000 people in that community.
And if I could just follow up once again, the dollar amount that we're asking for is the state's portion. So in that instance, that would be 75% of the total, and the other 25% would be paid for by the community.
Senator Hunstead.
I would also like to say that I really like this program, and I think it's been good for South Dakota. But that's anecdotal. Can you tell me how we've done and how we've been able to keep folks within the state and all of the goals that we set for this program as we brought it forward?
Madam Chair. This program has been very successful. At this point, just a piece of information, we have 10 slots in the physician reimbursement program and 5 slots in the dental. At this point, all of the slots are full with the exception of 1 in the physician tuition reimbursement program. So we do have participating healthcare professionals in the program. And out of 15 physicians that have completed the physician tuition reimbursement program, 10 of them are participating to continuing to practice in the state. So we've kept them in South Dakota, and 9 of them are still in the community where they participated in the program. And so that just shows that our goal is to recruit and retain these healthcare professionals in the state. And up until now, it has proven to be a successful tool for small communities.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Any other proponents? Good morning, Mr. Connect.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Paul Connect, I'm Executive Director of the South Dakota Dental Association, a registered lobbyist for that group. We would just like to echo our support for this bill and for this program, obviously the dental portion of it. We have found it to be a very successful tool in helping convince young people and new dentists to go to the rural parts of our state. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Any other proponents? Proponents. Any opponents? Opponents? Opponents. I will close this hearing to public testimony and open it up for discussion and interaction. Senator Bartling.
Madam Chair, I move to pass. Second.
It's been moved by Senator Bartley, seconded by Senator Brown, to approve House Bill 1043. Any comments on that motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bartley.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to move this. I do know both of these doctors, actually. One is a relative. I do know Dr. Rainier as well, and he is very welcomed in the Martin community as well. So this program has really given 2 young people great opportunities, and they will stay in South Dakota.
Great. Thank you. Motion before you is due pass on House Bill 1043. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling.
Aye.
Hunstead.
Aye.
Dollars.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
7-0. Motion carried. Thank you. And Senator Bartling, I would ask you to carry the bill on the floor. Thank you. I'm going to defer House Bill 1076 for just a minute. We need to do a piece of action here. Apparently yesterday I was not in the Senate, but we have a request to deliver to the floor Senate Bill 137. So we're going to need to act on that. Senator Haverly.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion, recommend do not pass.
Is there a second? It's been moved by Senator Haverly, seconded by Senator Brown for the bill to go out as a do not pass. Discussion, comments on that motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Haverly.
Thank you. Well, I think the committee process, I treat it very sacredly, and unless there's a reason, a very valid reason that a bill has not had a fair hearing, I think that's the way this committee should respond. And I don't see any reason why this particular bill should have a due pass motion when this committee already heard the bill and did its due diligence and did its work. With that, I would ask you to support the do not pass.
Thank you, Senator Haverly. Anything else? Motion then before this group is do not pass on Senate Bill 137. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling.
No.
Hunstead.
No.
Dollars.
No.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
4-3.
Motion carried. This bill will be delivered to the floor with a do not pass recommendation. Thank you. Now, we will move to House Bill 1076, which authorizes the Board of Regents to replace certain real estate held for agricultural field laboratory research purposes, to make improvements to the replacement lands, and to make an appropriation for such purposes. You know, I always feel guilty that I don't get back to SDSU, but after being on this committee for several years, I feel like I'm right back on campus again. Good morning, gentlemen. Please identify yourself for the home audience.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Mike Rieger, SDSU.
And I'm Wes Cheddar,
also of SDSU. The bill you have in front of you, in general terms, tries to consolidate a lot of the property around the campus, specifically related to animal agriculture. We have plots of land all checkerboarded all around the campus, as well as sites out through the entire state. That's not necessarily a efficient way to do things, and we began looking at the process of how we could pull together our cow-calf issues in one place rather than having some here, small plot there, large plot there. It's not the long term that we need. What we decided to look for was, how can we get the current cow-calf unit out of the residence hall area we have right now at Berg Bailey, where that's right next to the cow-calf unit. We have people moving animals back and forth all the time across highways. A lot of our existing facilities are inside the bypass. We're looking at ways not to have to take cattle across the bypass. That's not safe for them or us. And our current space doesn't allow us to do the kind of research that we really need to do. So we started looking for a site that would be near Brookings, but not far enough away that it was going to be a problem. We've identified a piece of land that we think is going to be perfect for the cow-calf units. It will dramatically improve our research activity, and that's really the baseline of this. By selling some existing land, we believe we can consolidate on another parcel west of Brookings. We have a willing seller, and I think we can make that deal work for everybody involved. The existing land would that we are suggesting that we get rid of will be sold by Commissioner of School and Public Lands for not less than the appraised value. So we'll have that taken care of. We're looking at a cost of $1,385,500 for the entire project. The SDSU Foundation has agreed to help us with this transfer of property and payment over time. That's the general outline of this legislation. Wes, you want to add anything?
Last question. So we'll start with Senator Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me, do you have an appraised value of the property?
Yes.
What might be available? And I apologize if you
said that. Yeah, we have an appraisal. I have it with me. It was done in late November, so it did reflect the most current value of getting ready for a legislative session. So you're welcome to look at it. I have one copy. And so this
Madam
the amount
Chair,
is there is the appraised value.
Would it be permissible to just have him tell us what the appraised value is?
It's exactly the amount that's in the bill of the purchase price. Yes, correct. To the dollar. Yep.
Okay. Senator Hunstad.
I guess now that kind of makes it a two-part question, Madam Chairman. I would like to know how much of that was going to be structure and how much it was going to be land. It would be. I would like to know the details of that. But let me ask the second half of it, and then I can leave my mic off. The second part would be the property that it's currently on is in the dormitory area, I believe you suggested, which would lead me to believe it's right on the campus area. How won't that chop up the campus in some way that would be unacceptable? And, I mean, I'm wondering how you even made a decision that that parcel should be sold, even if that barn was taken down.
Go ahead.
First of all, this property is located about 10 miles west of Brookings. It's contiguous, four quarters of pasture, which is very hard to find, particularly in that part of the state. It was identified about a year ago as potential, and they did the analysis in terms of its suitability. It has a couple of old building sites, but essentially no improvements that have any value for the purposes of the field laboratory. And so the bill includes $150,000 authority to make improvements to the property to build barns and suitable facilities for the cow-calf unit, which will be physically moved to this area. The cow-calf unit is right west of campus. That property will not be sold. It'll be used for other purposes. What's going to be sold is the pasture that is about on the west edge of Brookings. That's what the description here is. It borders the west side of the town, 320 acres running north and south, that will be sold. Now, it's not going to be perfect in terms of the timing, in terms of the sale versus the purchase, and that's why the legislation reads as it is, as it does. And in terms of, so the second, the question, your second part of your question is a sale. Actually, the answer is no, we aren't selling the area that's right by campus. It might have a different use. In fact, there are several options that our planning process has identified for the use of it. Where we're cabbing now and the acreage west of campus is along 6 Mile Creek, and you realize that the public acceptance for a cow or calf operation, any kind of agricultural operation, is a lot different than probably 1921 when this property that is going to be sold was purchased. So you have a different a whole different site for cow calving. The experiment station runs about 200 cows on this site, so even the number of cows they're dealing with and calving within the city limits and right next to a creek, I don't have to tell you all the problems that are come up with that. But I hope that answers your question, Senator.
Senator Brown.
To help me clarify here, what is the number of acres that you're going to be selling, and what's the number of acres that you end up gaining after you complete this transfer?
The number of acres that are purchased are right at 632 acres, four quarters. Three quarters are kind of L-shape in one side of the road, and across the road to the west are 280s end-to-end for the fourth quarter. Okay. They are exactly 9 miles west of experiment station's present location, north end of town. So they can go get to this property without going across any Highway 14 and whatever else, and it's northwest of Volga. What is going to be? It will replace. It's 320 acres minus a road bypass, a right bypass, and a railroad right of way, and whatever else. I think it's right at 292 acres of usable pasture that. Which there is some area, some of that, particularly in the north end along the bypass, is very, very functional for development, and as well as some property that's along the creek, which is not very suitable. So taken together, we've not done the analysis and saying, well, it's that this property to be sold is going to be X dollars and a dollar for dollar replacement. We know that the north part of it is very valuable for industrial or retail or whatever. The south end, which is low and along the creek, is not as valuable, but may have public purposes as well. We have been in conversation with the city about if they're interested in the property, and at this point in time, they haven't indicated an interest, but this may well develop, although I'm not necessarily counting on that as happening, but it's there. That's why the legislation reads that the city of Brookings may acquire it through the process with school and public lands without going out for bid and just do an appraisal.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got several questions. Section 1, that is currently the land that you want to sell is currently used for field laboratory research. Is that correct? So what's going to happen with those functions?
Okay. All of the functions will move to the new property that's enumerated in Section 4. So what you see in Section 1 is the land to be sold, plus there are several other areas that we have research taking place on campus and near campus that will be vacated for this particular cow-calf unit and relocated to the purchased property.
Leads to my follow-up. Then that property that you're vacating on campus, what do you plan to do with that?
Okay, there's, first of all, it's right on campus. There's options in terms of in our residence hall planning process. We may be using it for that. We may be relocating parking from right along Madera Avenue west, and as that moves west, it does affect it. This cow-calf unit comes right up to with about 50 feet of the Berg Bailey complex. That's the residence hall on the west edge, northwest of the horse unit and the existing residential area. Hanson, Berg Bailey are right there. So look out your window and see it. So
go ahead.
In addition, we're looking at that parcel for some public-private projects that we might go in together, housing, retail, whatever. We don't know what the possibilities are there, but because it is so close to the existing residence hall systems, it looked like we should explore that opportunity.
And it's also near, excuse me, Madam Chair, right along Six Mile Creek. So there's some of those options are dictated by the use that you can have along that.
So you will be coming back to future legislators that you'll want capital access or capital improvements there, and you're going to want more money because now we've freed up some land. Is that correct?
I never say never.
All right. Well, I just want to know what's on the board there. What is the current assessed value of the property that you want to sell? Do you know that?
Well, it's not on the tax rolls, so there wouldn't be assessed. The north 30 acres likely is in the $250,000 range through an appraisal done about 4 years ago. The north 30 acres abutting the Highway 14 bypass. And then beyond that, you're talking pasture land and some up to and whatever else, and that's anybody's guess, 2,000 acre. Perhaps for the remaining, 237 acres?
Okay. Just educate me. You sell this. Where does that money go?
It'll go towards the purchase of the land. This is unique in this property was purchased outside of the School and Public Land Trust in 1921. So the land be sold can be used to purchase the land. So while the timing may not be perfect, we will offset the purchase cost with the sale cost, and the School and Public Land Trust process is outside of this because of the nature of the way this land was bought by the state and the Board of Regents and the university back in 1921. I've had to answer this question several times, Madam Chair, because of the trust process in School and Public Lands.
All right. Then I want to refer you to page 2, section 5, line 17. It says if you don't derive enough that you can then go to the sale and product of services of an experiment station. What does that mean exactly?
Well, they do run a livestock operation, so there is, and farming operation, so the any proceeds that we may accrue from the sale of products, livestock, whatever, we can apply against the purchase price like you would in any operation. Hopefully you got to make some money, but then research you don't necessarily make money. So there is an income stream that we can apply to the property, but it wouldn't be all in 1 year, we might have to figure out some kind of amortization schedule to do that. So.
Well, you just led me to the next question. Where's this fund? Where's this money gone now? I mean, if you're selling crops or products, where's this money gone now?
It goes into the research activities of the experiment station. All the sale of livestock goes into back into the purchase of replacement livestock, then you would have an income stream from grants and contracts and whatever else that would help to the costing this out. This is a huge project. This is not a one-year payback deal. This is like any acquisition where you'd have to amortize it over a number of years. And so,
Senator Ahlers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following with Madam Chair's line of questioning, if you take money from another source, what service or that you would normally be providing from the monies generated from the ag experiment station, what would you normally be spending those dollars on, and what are you going to cut? What service are you cutting if you take money from that fund?
Okay, the research plan that the experiment station would have will have to accommodate a cost, because they're going to have a cost of the property built into the research research project specific cost. So they'll have to budget that into many, many projects. And initially, we'll have to it's now being financed by the SDSU Foundation. We'll have to pay them back over the course of the project. Specifically, a project that's going to be affected is we'd have to talk to the experiment station director. But as I indicated, this is a long-term deal. It might be if we have $200,000 that we don't recover from the sale, then we'd have to amortize that $200,000 against the many, many projects, and say every project has to account and budget for so much of the amortization of the cost. I know I'm not answering your question directly, but it's going to have to be built into every little project that involves the reproductive research for the cow calf unit and the feedlot trials.
Go ahead. Do you have a follow up?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to get to the heart of it, you're not going to be coming back here and asking for more appropriated dollars to make up for that.
Definitely not.
Okay.
I have a few more. Is there, I assume there's a, if I'm into this animal business and I got a cow, I got to watch, whatever, is there a student fee that's associated with this? And would there be any change in that fee because you're relocating?
No. No, this is the research part that's part of the agriculture experiment station, and yes, there is an instructional component. The instructional component is not affected by this location, whatever else. It's agriculture experiment station that's relocating their cow-calf unit from campus, just like the dairy unit was relocated four decades ago, and one time a poultry unit. This unit still happens to be right physically on campus, and so it's it doesn't affect the student fee dollars, and won't, and there's no revenue stream there.
All right, then one last question. This is being relocated off of campus, not denying that.
Yeah.
What are the costs that are being attributed? Now you're moving this 10 miles west of town. Have you looked at what those additional costs are to relocate this?
Yeah, there are. Understandably, additional costs, but there are costs the way we do business now, as Dr. Rieger mentioned, in terms of transporting livestock back and forth. We're transporting feed to the location, and so there is some savings as well. The whole unit will move, so the cost will be less in terms of transporting feed and livestock. It will be the
is that a sign from God?
Nine miles, and the lights will go out eventually if we don't pay the bills, and as hinted by the current situation. So we'll try to pay the bills and keep them on. So.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you for participating in the drill. Are there any other proponents? Any other proponents? Are there any opponents? Any opponents? Opponents. Seeing none, I will close this hearing to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action. Senator Haverly.
Yes, move do pass House Bill 1076.
Thank you. It's been do pass moved by Senator Haverly, seconded by Senator Ahlers. Discussion on that motion.
Let's just send this over to the Senate floor.
All right. With that being said, the motion before you is do pass on House Bill 1076. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling?
Aye.
Hunstead?
Aye.
Collars?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Haverly?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
7-0.
7-0. Motion carried. Senator Ahlers, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, committee, you've been excellent. We still finished our work in a very good time frame. Just a reminder, we will have bill hearings tomorrow morning, and we'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow instead of 9 o'clock. So with that, is there anything else to come before the committee? Again, I say thank you, and I would entertain. Oh, it's been moved by Senator Bartling, seconded by Senator Nostrup to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Have a great day.